2FM. With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thank you as always to Jenny Green and the team. Happy Friday. It is Friday the 19th of February. This is Game On.
Coming up today, can the underdogs cause an upset at the Australian Open Finals?
I'll have a good practice tomorrow, a little gym session, and just try to just prepare the way I've been preparing for every single match, not trying to overhype it. I'm sure I'll be nervous, but I'm going to be super excited.
First of all, I like that I don't have a lot of pressure because he never lost in eight times that he was here in the final. So it's him who has all the pressure, getting to Roger, Rafa in the Grand Slam. So.
Can't beat the mind games. Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan will be with us as well. We've got John Egan injury news and big derbies to preview in Milan and on Merseyside.
And the Everton recovery continues apace as they add to the pain of Liverpool. Roy Hodgson in his first derby in charge and the first game in front of the new owners, disappointed, falling to the neighbours. And the new owners may have smiles on their faces, but beneath that they will have seen that turning Liverpool around for the men from Boston will be no tea party.
Plus, we've Jim Mangan on Tiger Rule's return and Jason Smith on being ready to take on Tokyo.
Game on 2FM.
You can text the programme, 51552 is our number. You can tweet at Game On 2FM. Dunnick O'Callaghan, how are you?
I'm great. Yourself, Damien? We made it Friday.
I tell you. And you know what? I'm off for the weekend, just doesn't happen all that often.
Yes.
So I am counting
down.
What
a weekend to be off.
Because I can be refreshed, relaxed and ready to go for 18:30 GMT or whatever it is. No, we are GMT, are we? Half six Irish time, yeah, Sunday evening. I'll be sitting on the couch with my 9-year-old watching Ireland's Fittest Family.
Look, I don't want to shamelessly plug it, but it is the most eagerly awaited weekend or event of the weekend, isn't it?
I'm going to take a picture of the running order. I don't want to shamelessly plug it. The very first thing on the running order tonight is Ireland's Fittest Family Final, 6:30 Sunday, RTE1.
I've actually written it into all my intros, hoping that I can shamelessly plug it.
Drive on. If you can't sell yourself, what
absolutely
can you sell?
Absolutely. And look, I'll be honest, I'm doing it for the others. In typical GAA fashion, it's not about me, it's about the team.
Now, we have people that have been listening over the course of the week, quite genuinely, my 9-year-old, this is she's having a bit of a birthday celebration across the weekend, her weekend is built around Ireland's Fittest Family.
Who's she shouting for?
Well, come here, it goes without saying.
Brilliant.
She's shouting for the Allen family, are Team Dunica.
I've never been around the Tipperary crowd so much that I wanted to do so well. Yeah. So
She was really disgusted that Derville has so many teams in the final. She actually thought it was unfair that one coach could potentially dominate it as much.
Yeah,
and I think she's slightly scared of Davey, like we all are, so she's not going to ever say anything negative about Davey. But she's been genuinely at me over the course of the week. You have to find out what happened, Dad. You have to find out what happened. I have failed.
Yeah, well, look, don't feel bad about it. I haven't even told my own kids, so they actually enjoy sitting down and watching. And Damien, it's the first year that all my family are shouting for me in it. Normally they shout for Anna or Derv, or they might like the tops that Davy's families are wearing, so they could shout for, but all the O'Callaghans are on board shouting for the Allen. So
what's worse is, I met Darren Maloney in the office earlier.
And the voice of it.
The voice of Ireland's Fittest Family.
Who keeps slagging me off. Will you have a word with him?
Well, he told me he'd be listening, so he could be listening. I was like, Ireland's Fittest Family, Darna. How did it finish? I can't remember.
Brilliant.
I'm telling you, he'd have given me his PIN number quicker.
Yeah. Well, he's had a go off my hair, my tracksuit bottoms, which, rightly so, they do deserve a bit of a slagging, but all will be revealed this Sunday night, RTE 1:30. It should be...
6:30.
Half six. What did I say?
You said 1:30.
Oh, Jeannie.
It's definitely 6:30, Dunica.
Half six.
It's definitely 6:30. I'll have a chat with Dara. You do know now that you work here with us, we do have a HR department. If there's anything you're not happy with, I'll put you in touch.
The funny thing about it is, he's right. We had the saying in rugby, you can't slag if it's true. And he's saying all the truthful things about my pants not fitting or my hair having a malfunction.
Yeah.
Easy, Darragh, please.
I have to renew my... Sorry, we're going to go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, okay.
I have to renew my passport. I haven't had my hair cut since November. I'm going to be stuck with a passport with a head on me like a Yeti for the next 10 years. So I feel your problem. No, you can do it online, apparently. Sorry, I've been told in my ear the passport office is closed. I was reliably informed you can do it online.
Okay. I'm that 51552, if you know.
I'm that optimistic about the ability to leave the country in 2021 that I'm going to renew my passport. How do we end up talking about this?
Yeah, bar Ireland's for this family, 6:30 Sunday, RT1. What else is going on this week?
Well, I'm a bit worried about watching Liverpool against Everton tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that clip in the opener sends shivers down my spine. Everton beating Liverpool. Roy Hodgson is the Liverpool manager. There's so much in that that's a lifetime away. And then, of course, there's the opportunity to sit down tomorrow night to watch the GAA GPA All-Stars.
Yeah, plenty going on in that, isn't there?
Yeah. Do you know what? I know the headlines will be, like, Dublin have equaled a record. You know, basically... Dublin with a record equaling 9 players.
Yeah.
But how great is it to see Cavan players in it, Tipperary players in it? Like, it's with the year that we had it, you know, 3 Cavan men, Tipperary man along the way as well. So spread it out. Dublin obviously dominated, but great to see those great stories of the year rewarded as well.
Absolutely. But then, I bet the Dubs will look at it and go, why isn't Stephen Cluckson there? Why isn't, you know what I mean? That's what you do when you've dominated for so long. You look and think, why haven't we got more? We only got 9.
I often feel sorry for, you know, when the shortlist comes out and it's like 14 of the players who started the All-Ireland final are nominated. And you're thinking, jeez, what happened to the poor fella? Did Donegal Callaghan have that bad a game in the All-Ireland final that he's the one fella left out?
Yeah, absolutely. But he can be the one that drives everyone on, that everyone's there. They're not respecting us any bit. We'd have to win 12 in a row.
Yeah. Are you on Pro 14 duty for the weekend?
I'm not. I'm sitting down now and watching it all. But there's plenty of action going on. In fact, Rob Kearney was in action already with the Western Force. They took on the ACT Brumbies. They lost 27-11. To be fair, he had a decent game. Cairns was decent. I did get a giggle when the commentators announced that he is the oldest outfield player ever to play in Super Rugby. But with the nature of his performance, he certainly was massively impressive. We spoke about it yesterday. The Dragons take on Leinster and Glasgow versus Ulster tonight. And then there's Munster travelling to Edinburgh and Connacht taking on the Cardiff Blues. So there's a lot going on rugby-wise. It should be a good one.
Okay, so we'll have a big Donegal Callaghan-shaped hole in the couch across the weekend from watching all of that. Let's get stuck into the soccer weekend that lies in store. We'll look ahead to a couple of the big derbies in a minute. Delighted to be saying we're joined by Alan Cawley is with us, as is Fergal Brennan. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Hello. Evening, men.
Good to talk to you both. Alan, I suppose we have to start with this John Egan news. It didn't look too good the other night when you see a player leave the pitch on a stretcher with their foot in a protective boot and then to hear he was on crutches afterwards. A dislocated toe, which is going to require surgery. And as if Stephen Kenny hasn't had enough to worry about in recent weeks, this is a massive blow just a couple of weeks ahead of these World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, I agree totally, Damien. It's a huge, huge blow when we obviously saw the incident last week. And of course, as you said, he was coming off on a stretcher and Chris Wilder confirmed then he was on crutches afterwards. Straight away, you're fearing the worst. And obviously those fears were confirmed today. And it's just another long, long list of the blows that Stephen Kenny has had to face so far. And the fact that we're so close to the start of the qualifiers as well, the 2nd of March, and there's 2 games. So it's hugely disappointing, I think, John, for himself, obviously, but for all of us watching in. For Stephen, and it's when you look around at the competition then and who's going to obviously fill the void. Shane Duffy's struggling at Celtic, Kieran Clark is kind of in between playing bits and bobs at Newcastle, Kevin Long something similar at Burnley. So it'll be interesting to see what Stephen does, but absolutely it's a huge, huge blow to lose John Egan.
Yeah, Fergal, we look ahead at the weekend and it's a weekend of derbies, both Inter Milan and AC, but the big one, the Merseyside derby. You know, there's a bit of bad blood maybe from the last one. Well, there always is in a derby match. How do you see it going?
I think in terms of this, Liverpool's record, Evertonians won't thank me for reminding them, but their record in this game is so strong. Everton haven't beaten Liverpool home or away since 2010. They haven't won at Anfield since 1999. And I think given the way that derbies normally pan out, what we've seen in the last few years, particularly under Jurgen Klopp, is there's plenty of passion, the tackles will be flying in, the yellow cards will definitely be flying, but the key moments of the game, the kind of the times where you need a cool head or a bit of a ruthless streak, have always gone Liverpool's way. And the players that have got particularly in attack mean that they've always got that in their back pocket to win these games. And Liverpool have obviously had their issues in the last few weeks, and possibly even going back to the last few months, and Man City obviously scooting away with the title at the minute. But they looked impressive against Porto the other night, and I think for all the steps that Everton have made this season, and they do look right in the mix to qualify for the Europa League, Liverpool have so much quality, and a bit of a cliche as it is, the beware of the wounded beast, I think, is definitely true when it comes to Liverpool. And the players that they've got and the brilliant record they've got in this game, they will want to win this. And I think they do slowly showing signs of getting back to what they were at the back end of 2020. So I would be back in Liverpool in this, despite Everton, as I say, improving. I just think the quality that Liverpool have in those all-important areas will win the day for them.
But Alan, when you look at it, it must be the easiest of team talks for Carlo Ancelotti. Everton 3 points behind Liverpool, a game in hand, and the prospect of being able to either dislodge them as the top team on Merseyside between now and the end of the season is appetising, to say the least.
Absolutely, Damien. Yeah, they'll never have better incentives, and they shouldn't need incentive going into a big derby game anyway. But as you rightly say, the position that they're in the table, sitting seventh, they've a game in hand on Liverpool as well. To win that, obviously, to go ahead of Liverpool, and with still with the fighting chance of finishing in the top four. But realistically, I think they have a better chance of just maybe finishing in the top six. And if you were to say that to Carlo Ancelotti at the start of the year, that after 23 games you'd have a game against them, and with the opportunity of obviously going ahead of them in the table, and with the opportunity also of finishing ahead of them in the league, he probably would have laughed at you, but he would have snapped your hand off as well. So there's huge incentive for Everton going into this match, but I would be wary also. You have to look at Everton's form the last two games. Fair enough against Man City, any team can lose against Man City and how good they are, we all know that. But what would worry me was the performance against Fulham last Sunday. I thought Everton were absolutely dreadful, Damien. And even though Liverpool, I know they're on a run of three defeats in the Premier League, last week against Leicester they were very, very good for 75 minutes. They dominated the whole game. Obviously, the wheels came off when they conceded the first goal, and we all know about Alisson's mistake as well. But during the week against Leipzig, I was so impressed with them. I thought they played really, really well. And if they turn up like that against Everton, I can only see one winner here in the derby.
Alan, just on this, like, there is no crowds in a big derby match, but put back on your playing boots the Van Dijk injury with Pickford. Do you think that will come up as a player, you know, going out into a big game like this? You know, it was probably something that, you know, it was a foundation block towards Liverpool's season creaking a bit.
Yeah, possibly, Donica, but I think the days are gone of where retribution is kind of trying to, you try to avenge something like that in the next match. The days gone by where you could go out and basically nail a fella and get away with it, them days are gone now. So any kind of ill feeling towards Pickford, it's not a case of that any of the players will feel, oh, when we go up for a corner, we'll try and lay one on him or anything like that, you know. I think they'll try and do their talking with their feet and obviously get the result, and that's the sole focus for Liverpool. And they're under a bit of pressure as well, Donica, because obviously it's a derby game against your nearest rivals, and because of the reasons I outlined with Everton being so close to them in the table. But also, they also have a fight on their hands just to finish in the top four. And like, when we at the outset, Liverpool were looking to obviously regain their title, and they would have been strong favourites to do that. We all know the way it's transpired with the injuries and the lack of form, and the league is gone now, obviously, to Man City. But they still have a fight on their hand to get into that top four, and who would have thought at the start of the year that Liverpool wouldn't finish in the top four? So there's a bit of pressure on them going into this game. Klopp will obviously want to stop the rot of the fact that they've lost three games now in the Premier League, especially when you consider how good they've been for the last 2 years, really. So there is a bit of pressure, but I do fancy them to come up with a big reaction in the game tomorrow.
But Fergal, when we look across the games, and okay, there's a couple of tasty rivalries along the way, or games that historically you've said that's the big one, but here we sit 14 games left in the season, and you're looking at West Ham against Spurs as almost the most compelling game of the weekend, the Merseyside derby aside. West Ham with a massive chance of qualifying, well, sorry, certainly a massive chance of qualifying for Europe, an outside chance of pushing for the Champions League, and Spurs, who appear to be under increasing pressure under Mourinho.
Yeah, I think obviously, as Alan said, we talk about stories that we wouldn't have expected to be encountering in 2021, and West Ham pushing for potentially a Champions League spot definitely falls into that category. I think what has essentially happened with David Moyes and his players is they don't have any pressure on them to get even into the Europa League, because at the start of the season, their brief would have been probably to keep themselves just outside of the relegation zone, mid-table, a top-half finish would be a massive achievement. But they've essentially taken that message and ran with it. And as you say, now looking ahead to this game this weekend against Tottenham, you're almost tipping them as favourites. They do have home advantage, obviously, with no crowds, but the way that they've been playing, the way they dismantled Sheffield United last time out, the way they looked really impressive against Aston Villa, they had patches against Liverpool at the back end of last month where they eventually lost. But Tottenham at the moment, particularly with results going their way and Jose Mourinho, the mask starting to slip slightly, the cracks starting to show already, you'd kind of be tipping for West Ham on this one, because whilst Tottenham have got Harry Kane and Son Heung-min back and they were on the score sheet last weekend and they're always an enormous threat to any team that they come up against, West Ham look like a very, very cohesive unit at the moment. Again, the old kind of cliche, they don't have any stars, they've just got a system that works, they've got players that will fight for each other, they've got players with a bit of quality, and they've got goal scorers that can win them games. So despite the fact that on paper Tottenham have obviously got a much better side and a more showbiz manager, given the way West Ham are going at the minute, this is something that you would go for them on. But the games they've got coming up probably in the next month, they play City away next weekend, then they've got United and they've got Arsenal, they're moving into March, that will probably define where they end up at the end of the season. If they can come through that with say double figures in points, you'd be really, really banking on them to sneak into at least the Europa League.
Alan, can I ask you about Gareth Bale? How do you solve the enigma? Because I was driving home in the car last night and I flicked on BBC Five Live and I'm listening to them talking about the Spurs game and he completely dominated it. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, where has that been, not only in recent years, but in recent weeks?
Well, last Friday, Damien, I was very, very critical of Bale because Mourinho came out in the press conference and obviously had a pop at him for the Instagram post. And I actually agreed with Mourinho for doing that. And I wouldn't be Mourinho's biggest fan, as you know, but I actually did agree with him because since Bale has come back, and I loved Gareth Bale, always have. I think even some of the stick that he was taking in Spain, I felt it was probably unfair because of all that he achieved. And when he went over there, the trophies he won and how well he played, he was a superstar, and he is a superstar. But I felt his attitude since he's come back has been nothing short of disgraceful, and he hasn't tried a leg or lifted a leg. And you look at him and in the games and his approach in games and his effort, the lack of effort in any little games that he did play. And I felt Mourinho was right. What we saw during the week is possibly a reaction to that, Damien. I know it was only against Wolfsburg in the Europa League and the one fairly handsomely and the one well, but hopefully it is maybe to kick up the backside, because I laid it all on Bale's door in the fact that he has to look himself in the mirror and he has to ask himself the question and take some personal pride in the fact that his performances were so bad. And whatever about somebody playing bad, you can put up with that, but you can't put up with someone showing no effort whatsoever, and that's literally what he was doing. So maybe that got to him, Mourinho's comments last week, and he showed a bit of a reaction in the game in the Europa League, and hopefully it is a sign of things to come now in the league, because we all know he's a star when he turns it on, and there's loads left in the tank. There should be loads left in the tank as well. He's still young and he still has plenty to do and plenty to achieve, so hopefully for all our sakes as well, not just Tottenham fans, because he's a player we all love to watch, especially when he's in flying form.
Yeah, Fergal, looking back at the weekend, Man City taking on Arsenal, they're 10 points clear at the top. Do you think Arsenal will trouble them any bit, sitting in 10th place?
No, probably be the short answer to that one, Dan. I just think, we discussed this last week when Arsenal were going to play Leeds, and I think I kind of said that these are two of the most unpredictable teams in the league, and one of them would end up battering the other one, and that's exactly how it turned out with Arsenal winning 4-2, but City are just an absolute machine at the moment. The run that they're on, it's just almost unstoppable. Any time they kind of have a little bit of a bump in the road, as they did against Everton in midweek, they just react. They don't panic. They don't try to rush things. They don't try to force the issue. They just have so much confidence in each other. Guardiola has so much confidence in what he's doing. And at the moment now, they're in a position to be bringing back their all-time club leading goal scorer in Sergio Aguero and probably their best and most impactful player in Kevin De Bruyne. Whether they'll both play at Arsenal with an eye on Mönchengladbach next week, it kind of remains to be seen. But given the way that they're playing and that they're just sweeping teams aside. And to be honest, there's not really been that many times where we've seen them get out of second or third gear. They've been that consistent that despite Arsenal picking up an important win for them against Leeds last weekend, I can't see anything other than a City win and just another box ticked on the road to them going on and winning the title.
Fergal, before we let you go, just a word on the Milan derby as well. I think it's early afternoon on Sunday, and Milan is one of those cities that you are quite literally born to bleed red and black or blue and black, and there's no middle ground. But in light of the kind of flare-up, quite notable flare-up between Lukaku and Ibrahimovic last time out, there's a significantly added dimension to this game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we mentioned with the Merseyside derby at the start, you know, derbies don't need anything to get them kind of going, and that incident with Lukaku and Ibrahimovic lit the touch paper for this in the cup meeting at the end of January. They'll both be playing and they'll both be keeping an eye on each other in this one. But I think the biggest story from this is that Inter have gone above Milan to the top of the league in the last couple of weeks, and that will be essentially what kind of defines this. Are Inter mentally strong enough to hold on to that? Both of them are in a position where they're kind of not having to look too much over the shoulder at Juventus coming. So I think the pressure is on Inter to maintain that form. AC Milan have had a little bit of a wobble, but I honestly think that based on the cup game and how dramatic that was, and there's so many big players and big personalities involved in this, that I think we're in for an absolute cracker. And I really wouldn't bet against either Mr. Ibrahimovic or Mr. Lukaku having a massive impact on how this result goes on Sunday.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Fergal, thanks so much for joining us. Alan, thanks a million. I know you won't get to see the whole lot of the Man United Newcastle match. You'll surely be watching Ireland's Fittest Family Sunday at 6:30.
Glute with Dunican. Sort out them tracksuit bottoms, will you? They're horrendous.
Come here, Alan, before I let you go, I'm not going to let you off that easy. Just one more one for you. What did you make of Damien Duff's comments earlier in the week? And we talked there about John Egan missing the qualifiers. Is it a concern that publicly, at least, Stephen Kenny hasn't replaced him in the coaching staff just yet?
Just yet, I would say yes, but I think it's important that Stephen takes the time to obviously bring in the right man, because from all I hear and from every comment around the footballing circles, Damien Duff has big shoes to fill in terms of how good he is as a coach. And not only is the John Egan one, as you say, a huge blow, but losing Damien also. And I would be for Damien in terms of the fact that the comments that he made during the week, if he felt he wasn't happy, and I know for a fact he wasn't happy with a lot of stuff that went on, and if he's principled enough to stick to those principles, which he's a stubborn boy as well, and he's quite determined, and some people might say he might be a bit bullheaded at times, but he has strong feelings on what went on, and if he feels as though he can't work in that environment, I've no issues with that whatsoever, Damien. It leaves Stephen in a sticky position, obviously, but that's just the way things panned out, and I'm afraid I would be all for Damien.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Alan, thanks for being with us as always, and to Fergal, who's departed the scene in advance of that. We've got a lot more still to come in the programme, and we are going to look ahead to the Australian Open finals in tennis after the break.
With Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour. Game on.
Tennis. I'll have a good practice tomorrow, a little gym session, and just try to just prepare the way I've been preparing for every single match, not trying to overhype it, I'm sure I'll be nervous, but I'm going to be super excited.
First of all, I like that I don't have a lot of pressure, because he never lost in eight times that he was here in the final, so it's him who has all the pressure, you know, getting to Roger, Rafa in the Grand Slam, so
all set, and to look forward to a fantastic weekend of tennis, we're joined by Tennis Ireland's Gráinne O'Neill. Gráinne, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm very good. Gráinne, before we get into the finals, I must ask you, what are you going to do Monday morning when the tennis is gone? It's been keeping us all going.
I know, I won't know myself. It's been great to see professional tennis back, and even the fact that there's crowds back now, given the end of the 5-day lockdown in Melbourne, it's wonderful to have a bit of an atmosphere there. So I don't know what I'll do with myself. Yeah, probably just go back to normal routine.
Absolutely. So we know the women's final, Naomi Osaka versus Jennifer Brady. You've a bit of experience, obviously, playing college tennis. Would you have come across either of them?
I wouldn't have come across either of them, but would have followed, obviously, Jennifer Brady quite closely. You know, I think it's interesting with Brady. She probably wasn't a top American junior, but she obviously went the college route, did 2 years at UCLA Bruins, and she really flourished there. And I know she credits a lot of her success to the progress she made there. So I think it's just fantastic. Having played in the States myself, it's fantastic to see the progression she's made from college tennis to the pros. And I'd say it gives a lot of encouragement to the current players to kind of see that is a route they can go down and the success they could potentially have.
So everyone looks to the rematch of that quality semi-final in New York in 2020. Do you think we'll get the same type of a game?
Yeah, I really do think so. It's all set for a really intriguing final. Look, they both have very similar play styles. They're all-round players. They have big serves, big forehands, but they're both really comfortable finishing points at net. So, look, I think it's going to be a great final. I'm really excited to watch it. I think Brady definitely took advantage of her half, like it was dubbed maybe a little bit of the weaker half of the draw. But she fought her way through, and she's a fantastic player. And like the preview, she obviously said she's going to be nervous, but she's ready for the opportunity.
Just Grainne, on that, the psychological aspect of the two matches, and you know, you don't know how often a Grand Slam final is going to roll around again. So obviously, you're focused on winning it. But the psychology that's been alluded to in the clip we played there, how big a role can that play? Because you've got two players who go in as absolute roaring favourites and two that go in with very little expected of them aside from the pressure that they put on themselves.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think it's an interesting aspect as well given the fact that they've played with no crowds there and then also now the crowds on the latter end of the tournament. So I do think it plays a huge factor. I'd imagine that the likes of Medvedev and Brady, they'll have a lot of confidence knowing, and they'll play quite loosely, knowing that there is no pressure on them. Look, they're not expected to win, but obviously they'll have jitters themselves. You know, being in a Grand Slam final, and I think you have to look at Djokovic and Osaka. You know, like they'll be very confident having gone through that process themselves. So it certainly plays a factor. I think just kind of the start of the match will kind of test the waters and see which way this is going to turn, but I do think it plays a factor, certainly, yeah.
Just overall, when we look at it, it's been, I don't know, is it the fact that there's not an awful lot of other sport on, and maybe we're paying attention to it a little bit more than we might do in other times, considering most of the action takes place in the middle of the night. But there's been so many brilliant stories over the course of the last couple of weeks. You know, the highs of Karatsev and the history he's made, the image of Serena and the obvious disappointment of not, you know, making history along the way. Despite the craziness behind the scenes and all that went on beforehand, it probably will be remembered as one of the better Australian Opens of recent times.
Ah, yeah, definitely. Like, I think just for any tennis fan or sports fan, generally, it's just great to see competitive sport at this time, you know, given the pandemic. I think for Serena, it's definitely kind of hard to gauge what way she's going to go now. And I know the media, there'll be a huge amount of speculation. You know, definitely her leaving the court the way she did and kind of waving to the crowd and then the press conference as well, where, you know, she didn't allude to the fact that she was going to retire or not. And then she obviously appeared visibly upset. You know, I don't think we can look too closely into that because it was obviously a highly emotional moment. But I just think, you know, in reflection, it's a great time for tennis to be shown at the biggest stage. And, like, it's interesting. I think the Australian Open last year was the last Grand Slam before the pandemic and everything that followed it. So I think all credit has to go to the Australian Open and the huge amount of preparation and resources and people that went behind it going pretty much smoothly, as of right now anyway, and I think they'll be happy overall with the success and the numbers who've tuned in and watched it.
Grainne, and as Damien said, of course at the start it was all about the lockdown and the players' spats, but now it's all about the tennis, and I would think Naomi would be favourite going into it. What would Bradley have to do to overcome and win the title?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think, look, they both have similar styles. So I think for Brady to pressure Osaka, she's going to have to be the aggressor in the point. So she's going to have to look to take the first big forehand, look to dictate with her serve. and really just try and put as much pressure on Osaka to not allow her play her game. Osaka is so good at what she does because, you know, she's a great counter-puncher. She's hugely aggressive and she has fantastic defence, so she kind of has that whole package. But for Brady, it's just a matter of trying to put her under pressure right from the start. You know, I think given her background, I'd love to see Brady be a bit of expressive on court, a lot of fist pumps. But I know obviously with Osaka's form, she's hugely, hugely good at the mental side of tennis, and she always appears very composed. She doesn't get flustered too easily. Very little phases her. So she really is going to have to do a lot to try and upset Osaka, but I think she's going to have to do a better game. She's going to have to play better than Osaka plays and just be that aggressor at the very start.
But then on the flip side, to look at the men's, if there is to be a shock, it's probably far more likely to come in the men's. And you kind of forget that Medvedev is at a career-high fourth in the world. So like, this isn't some legger that's managed to make his way to the Australian Open final. Has obviously competed in the Grand Slam final before in the US Open 2 years ago. So while publicly he might be talking about the pressure being on the other side of the net, personally he must be looking at this as his time to reach his full potential and join the annals of the greats.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but it's really important to note, like, he's on a 20 match win streak right now. He hasn't lost. He's been on a streak since November. It's interesting, I watched his press conference after, and he kind of alluded to the fact that he's prepared for a 5-hour battle with Novak Djokovic, so he's hugely mentally focused. And I actually think going into this final, he is the favourite. You know, he plays really well. It's just, you know, the big question is, will he play the same tennis and the same level of tennis that he has been showing on the big stage in a Grand Slam final? And that obviously remains to be seen. But I do think there seems to be less pressure. But, you know, he has, like you said, had a hugely impressive run of form. And I do predict, I think there could be an upset on the men's side, more so on the men's side than the women's side tomorrow.
Grani, why do you say that? They're both quite similar in playing styles. Do you think it'll come down to a battle of fitness?
I think so. And I don't think Djokovic has had as straightforward a run as he would have hoped for. You know, obviously he had that abdominal injury in his 5-set match versus Taylor Fritz in the third round. Now, it's interesting, in his semi-final win, he claimed he was pain-free. But I think for listeners, you know, if they are watching tomorrow, it'll be interesting to see if Djokovic takes a medical timeout, and obviously the kind of psychological implications that would have for Medvedev's confidence. You know, that it might allude to the fact that the injury's back and he's a little bit worried. But, you know, he is a fantastic player, and I think what Medvedev does so well is that he makes his opponents feel so uncomfortable. He plays quite loose, hits the ball quite flat, and has fantastic placement. So, you know, he could trouble and rattle Djokovic a little bit, but, you know, it's important to note, obviously, Djokovic has never lost an Australian Open final ever. That's a very significant stat to consider. So it'll be a very intriguing final.
Absolutely, Grania. Let's hope for some brilliant tennis, and that you're not disappointed Monday morning by the void of it. We'd love to get you back on again to chat about the game in Ireland and your role within it. We would love to catch up sometime soon, but enjoy the tennis and thanks for joining us on Game On. Quick break and we're back chatting to Jane Mangan.
Game On QFM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm. On the go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game On Racing.
Okay, welcome back to Game On, and there is plenty of big prizes on the line this weekend, but none of them can compare with the Saudi Cup. And to review the weekend racing and preview all the exciting action this weekend, we're joined as always by the great Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very good, and I know you mentioned the Saudi Cup there, but we're going to concentrate a little bit closer to home, because $20 million just sounds a different atmosphere, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
I was convinced he was going to mention Ireland's fittest family again, but sorry,
Jane, I've been shamelessly plugging Ireland's fittest family Sunday, 6:30 PM.
Well, Damien, if $20 million is what the prize fund is for the fittest family, then the Mangans may get in shape.
What I wouldn't give for just a tracksuit pants that fits. Jane, there's been plenty going on and we look forward at the weekend, but Davy Russell unfortunately won't be going to Cheltenham. He just lost out in that battle to get to fitness in time.
Yeah, as you say, it was always going to be a race. Look, Davy took a heavy fall at Limerick in October. He fractured his C6 and his C7 and he dislocated his T1. So it wasn't a break of an arm or a leg. This was a very serious injury. And the fact that he even got himself in contention to possibly be back in time to ride good horses at the Cheltenham Festival was a good goal for him. His hunger still burns. It's an enthusiasm that we must be in awe of. But Davy is 41. He won't appreciate me saying that, but I'm sure the bones don't heal as quickly as they used to. And look, while he has lost the battle with the clock to get back in time for Cheltenham, I'm sure, and I'm sure everybody's hoping, that he'll be back in time to partner the wonderful Tiger Roll in what will be a historic bid at Aintree in April.
Yeah, and Tiger Roll, who we'll chat about in a moment as well. The other big story of the week, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board, the appeals board, upholding the 6 months licence suspension for Charles Byrne. And people who are aware of this case will be all over it. But Viking Horde pulled up in Tramore in October of 2018, found to have had a prohibited sedative in its urine. The B sample tested, the appeal judgment published during the week, and very, very definitive from the IHRB.
Absolutely. Look, Charles obviously appealed the 6 month suspension that was handed down to him because essentially they have deemed him negligent for leaving the horse unattended at Tramore, and basically that is how the horse was got at, and hence the failed drug test. Look, it took almost 2 weeks for the appeals body to reach their verdict, and I suppose the IHRB were saying that it was a wake-up call to all other trainers. But look, this is a massive case, much bigger than leaving a horse unattended. At the end of all this saga, there is nobody held accountable for placing the lay bets. There is nobody held accountable for actually administering the drug to Viking Horde. So while Charles Burns is getting a six-month suspension, there was a lot of spectrums to this case, and this is the curtain closer.
Yeah, and just before we move on to talk about the action itself, are we talking about a landmark moment in, you know, there's been so much talk around CCTV and facilities at racecourses, that this is a chapter in time which one would imagine is going to instigate significant change in the day-to-day operation of tracks?
Well, the implementation of CCTV across every racetrack in the country should have happened before now, but it will definitely happen now. You know, things like this happen. I'm not saying they happen all the time. They certainly don't happen all the time in racing. This is a one-off case where of its magnitude, but it shouldn't take basically a kick up the rear end like this to get things right. Obviously, we had a release last week from the IHRB. We were stepping up on our testing across the board from stud farms to horses and training, and all those things serve to protect the integrity of the sport, which is crucial when we are competitive, not only domestically, but on an international scale.
Absolutely. And you mentioned it there, Jane, what a weekend it is. We might start by looking overseas and Ascot, the Betfair Ascot Chase. How do you see that going?
Yeah, I suppose the calendar this weekend is quite busy in the UK. It's funny, we're quite in Ireland. Obviously, Limerick was supposed to be on today. That is cancelled. Tomorrow at Goring Park is cancelled, all due to waterlogging. And last weekend, the UK were suffering from similar circumstances and frost. So Newbury, obviously, has been rescheduled to Sunday, but we're starting with Ascot. The Ascot Chase, it might be a small field. There's only five horses in here, but Surname, Master Tommy Tucker, and Riders on the Storm, last year's winner. There's a lot of quality. It is a grade one in name, and it's got some grade one horses in nature. Surname has to basically redeem his reputation. He's the highest rated horse in the UK, and he needs to remind us why he is that, because he pulled up last time when he contested the King George behind his stable mate Frodon. And perhaps his biggest opponent this tomorrow is going to be Master Tommy Tucker from Paul Nicholls stable as well. Master Tommy Tucker has had issues with his jumping in the past, but this season he seems to have got it together. He was a decisive winner of the Sylvaniaco Conti Chase last time, a grade two, and he is a year older than Surname. Surname wears cheek pieces for the first time, and he's going to be ridden a little differently. They tried to ride him patiently at the King George. He looked like he didn't like it, so I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to go forward and dominate the five runner field tomorrow.
Your other big race tomorrow afternoon is at Haydock.
Yes, so we're going to switch codes, go to a hurdle. Itchy Feet, a grade one winning chaser on the blind side of Cathy Chaser. They're reverting back to hurdles and they have done so to great effect so far this season. Listen to Gar Oscar is a real interesting horse in here. He just hasn't shown us what he's capable of since he won the Stairs Hurdle at Cheltenham last year. He's had two runs this season. Both of them, I think it's fair to say, have been abysmal. He has had a wind operation since his last run. And I'm wondering, can that help him get back to winning ways with just around 3 or 4 weeks to go to the Cheltenham Festival?
Jen, we'll move on to Sunday and to Newbury. The Betfair Deadman Chase. It's a bit of a head-to-head, isn't it?
Yeah, the Deadman Chase has thrown up four horses. Since the turn of the millennium, four horses have done the double, the Deadman Chase and the Gold Cup. And this year's race, while it mightn't have a standout, it's got some interesting contenders. So Lost in Translation, like Surname, as I said in the last race, he pulled up in the King George very disappointingly as well, and similarly has got his win done. He was third behind an Album Photo last year and Santini, and he realistically, the age of nine, is open to more improvement. Now, Robbie Power, who is obviously based in Ireland, has gone back to the UK to ride this horse because he obviously believes he's a genuine Gold Cup contender. But if he is, he's going to have to beat Clan de Zabot, King George winner Kalashnikov, a very classy horse, and Secret Investor, not to mention the conditional. This is a proper renewal of the Denman Chase, but with the Colin Tizard team back in good form, I'm wondering, can Lost in Translation salvage the reputation that he had as a novice?
Then to talk about reputations and races that an awful lot of people are going to have an eye on. I'm not sure the last time Navan would have been the focus of so many people worldwide as it will be on Sunday. The return of Tiger Roll, the Boyne Hurdle, and this a very notable race for Tiger Roll in previous years, and will be interesting to see the return to form this year.
Yes, so Tiger Roll is an 11-year-old. He owes nobody nothing, and he will be most famously remembered for winning two Aintree Grand Nationals, but people do forget that he is a four-time Cheltenham Festival winner, and he has used the Boyne Hurdle as a springboard to Cheltenham's success in 2019. Things didn't happen for him last year, and I think maybe it was a blessing in disguise that Aintree didn't happen, but now he is back, he is on the road to redemption, and he's got some decent opponents in his own colours. Fury Road, his stable mate, a very classy horse in there. Beacon Edge is a horse I have a lot of time for from Noel Mead's stable. This is a very good renewal of the Boyne Hurdle. And while I don't expect him to win, Tiger Roll pulled up at Cheltenham last November, and I hope we see a completely different performance from him today.
Okay, so it's about perform to rob the cliched answer that rugby lads like Dunnock have rolled out for years. It's all about the performance rather than the result on Sunday. It's about coming through it in fine form and fitness ahead of Cheltenham in a couple of weeks' time.
Sounds good. That's
definitely it, and we want to see the enthusiasm that still burns bright. We know he loves the spring, and he's a star horse, so I would imagine a lot of people will be an eye to the next day for the Boyne Hurdle.
I wish our rugby players performed like Tiger Roll. Sorry.
They'd be quite durable, lad, but they'd be quite small. He'd be a bit of a Peter Stringer.
Exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't take him on.
So after you've watched Tiger Roll in Navan on Sunday, and then you've watched Ireland's Fittest Family Sunday evening, half past six.
RTE1.
Yeah. Molly Allen's.
For the Allens. There's our friends in the documentary on One here in RTE Radio have a six part podcast series about Tiger Roll. Tiger Roll, the people's horse, and episode one of that will drop on Monday.
Super.
I don't know why podcast episodes drop and aren't just released, but that's what the cool kids say. So I'm
Hopefully
his story isn't over. Hopefully there's another chapter.
Exactly. Well, maybe
the best is yet to come.
Maybe part six hasn't been made yet, Jane. Maybe they have five parts ready to go and they're hoping part six will be completed after Cheltenham.
There we go.
We'll have to wait and see.
Jane, before we leave you go, the Saudi Cup, please tell us about this. 20 million.
Yeah, so it's a long way from Dunica, Jane and Damien, but we'll get there someday, guys. It was inaugurated last year. It was won by Maximum Security last year, and there was a lot of controversy post-race. But this year, look, the money is always going to attract massive international competition, and Saudi Arabia want to establish themselves as a racing nucleus in the Middle East, and they are doing a successful job thus far. Roger Charlton has sent over Extra Exclusive. John Gosden has sent over Global Giant. And Mishriff, Mishriff, a horse I like an awful lot. Bob Baffert has sent his multiple Grade 1 winning 3-year-old Charlatan, who now turns 4. And an interesting angle to this as well is Johnny Velasquez was supposed to fly in from the US to ride Tactitious for William Mott. But when he flew to Spain, he wasn't allowed to change terminals to catch his connecting flight. So William Buick is now coming in for the ride. So it's not easy to get around the world, guys. And even if you are to contest a $20 million race, imagine if Johnny Velasquez's horse goes and wins it and he's stuck in Spain.
I'm sure he'd still be quite happy, Jane.
Oh, he doesn't get a cut of the winnings if he's not on board. But yeah, it is an interesting race. And I must say, before we wrap up, well done to Aidan McGuinness and Ronan Whelan. They had a great winner in Qatar today in Doha with their horse Bowerman. He won a local Grade 2 over there, and it just further reminds us this is such an international sport, and while we are locked down with massive restrictions, these guys are doing their best to compete at the highest level.
Absolutely. Jane, as always, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Have a brilliant weekend. We're going to take a quick break and we're back with Jason Smith.
Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, earlier in the week, Toyota Ireland, official partners of Paralympics Ireland, announced they were extending their sponsorship of 5 of their athlete ambassadors ahead of the 2021 Tokyo Games. One of those athletes is sprinter Jason Smith. Jason has 5 Paralympic gold medals to date. Marie, Ruby and myself caught up with him, Jason, and we started by asking him how he prepares for the preparations for his 4th Paralympic Games.
I think honestly a lot of it comes down to is being consistent and being consistent throughout a lot of that time. You know, I've been had injuries here and there, but you know, I've had no muscle injuries and hopefully that continues, but I've been able to be very consistent and continually put myself in the right environment to allow myself to perform. So hopefully, you know, that's come down from the people I've been around in the past and the places I've been. You know, I've been fortunate enough to learn a lot and keep trying to implement that.
How have you evolved as an athlete? Because obviously you've been doing it for quite a long time. So I'd imagine there's been a lot of changes just in terms of sports science, nutrition side of things, just even your own development in technique and also like your mentally as well, because it's a long time to keep going and to stay consistent like you have.
Yeah, I think that honestly is probably the hardest thing. I mean, the thing for me that I, as they say, I've been fortunate enough, at a very early stage in my career, I was around people that were very good at what they do, coaching, around some very, very good athletes. And therefore, at an early age, I learned, let's say, good principles and good foundations. When you talk about, you know, physically being in shape, preparation, nutrition, lifestyle. So I was fortunate enough to learn those early and that stand you in good stead throughout time if you stick to those things. I think definitely the thing that I suppose a lot of people do ask is the motivational side of things, is how do you stay motivated through such a long period of time? And there's no doubt within that, you know, like everybody, motivation goes up and down, but I think for me I've generally been able to keep things at quite a high level, and I think that's been down to finding and knowing what motivates me, and through time that has been very different. What motivates me today is not what motivated me 10 years ago, and you know, 10 years ago it might have been more about I still want to win now, but it was medals and winning. Where now it's definitely still about winning, but it's also about trying to, I suppose, make the most of this incredible journey, not let it stop. But on the same time, I've always wanted to do is try to achieve things that possibly nobody will do again or very, very few people will ever do. And, I mean, that's something that's motivated me in in the longevity of what I'm doing. It's not what I say. It's about what I do, and what I do is on the track, and I tend to like to let that do the speaking for, I suppose, the choices and the sacrifices and everything that's gone on through this length of time in my career.
How has your training changed as you've got older? Because, you know, endurance is favoured by time, but speed, you know, it's not really. How have you changed your training to adapt to ageing?
Yeah, that's definitely something quite challenging because, I mean, you hear it all the time in sport is as you get older, you've got to be smarter about the way you train. And I always think a funny kind of mindset around training is, you know, if you decide tomorrow to not train, you always think about what you lose. But, you know, the flip side of it is actually by not training tomorrow, do we ever think about what we might gain by not training? And it's not training because I'm lazy. It's knowing when the time is to pull back. It's knowing when the time to rest, or, you know, I've had an incredible couple of weeks, so it's time to just, you know, ease back a bit because I know I can't sustain. So for sure, you've got to be a lot more in tune with yourself and your body. And even on a year-to-year basis, you don't know how things change. So you've also got to be able to reflect on what you've done and keep notes of what you've done so you can look back and see, yeah, that worked. No, that didn't work. And constantly adapt and change. So, and that'll only continue depending on how long I keep going for. But over the next year or whatever, keep going for a number of years, that will continue to have to adapt and change and be smart in my approach.
So Jason, when you put all that into practice then, do you aim to be at X position in April, be so far in May? Does it work like that? Will you be peaked in June and back off and freshen up for August? What way will you go about it?
For me, it all comes down to August and making sure things are right. And like an example, we're in February and I know I might be at a 11.5 second 100 metre pace. And then March, I may go down to 11 second 100 metre pace. And then I may go down to 10.8 and 10.6. So I'm continually slowly dropping or increasing the speed, but then reducing the volume. And that all lines back to where I want to be in August. So I need to know where I need to be in August. And then from there, I move back. And that starts to tell me where I want to be in December, where I want to be in April. And if I'm not there, where I need to get to be back on path. So it's huge amount goes on just trying to figure it out. But, I mean, thankfully, and there's other athletes worrying about trying to peak, getting ready for games and getting qualifications. For me, I just, you know, solely look at August and making sure I get my preparation right all the way along till then.
Okay, that was Jason Smith. That's it from Damien and myself. Have a great weekend. Don't forget Ireland's Fittest Family, 6:30 on Sunday. Massive thank you to Laura Lee Davis and Ronan Lawler.